Busy with a series called Lost, and the question is obviously, are you lost in your personal finances? And we've learned a number of things so far. We've learned that being lost financially is a problem, because I cannot be a wholehearted follower of Jesus, be lost financially, and do nothing about it. That you cannot separate God from money. I cannot say, well, yes for God, yes God bless me, yes God be with my family, yes God give me a better job, yes God help me in this area, help me in that area, but God stay out of my finances and stay out of my wallet. I don't want you there. So we've learned a number of lessons. What I want to do is, before we get into today's message and what we're going to be talking about, I want to show you a video clip. Now before we show you the video clip, let me just give you a little bit of background on the video clip. This video was made in 2006. I'm just saying that because you need to know the time to be able to understand the context. Also, it was shot in the United States, so they use some terms that we don't necessarily resonate with. One is an Escalade. An Escalade is like a family van, okay, like a seven-seater type of family van. And then the other word that you will not necessarily understand is a 401k. Is a retirement fund. That's what they call a retirement fund in the United States, is a 401k. But let's watch this short video clip.
Hey, did you have a good day?
Not bad.
Good.
But there's a problem with the car.
The Suburban? How can be a problem with the Suburban? It's only 2 years old.
Well, I bumped into Phyllis Simpson today.
Oh, great. Well, what's the damage?
What?
Well, is there a dent, or did the bumper take most of the hit? What?
What hit?
You ran into Phyllis Simpson today with the car.
I saw her at the mall, okay? I mean, there was no bumping or denting or anything.
Well, then what's wrong with the car?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. When I bumped into her at the mall, she was getting out of her new Escalade. Her 2006 silver metallic Escalade with leather seats and a DVD player, XM radio, and OnStar.
The Simpsons got an Escalade? Mm-hmm. Those things are like $60,000.
$64,912 list. She left the sticker on it. In fact, she stood right next to the sticker. She even fixed her lipstick looking into the sticker. I'd like to stick her.
How could John afford something like that? Oh, great.
What?
Well, that means he's going to be driving it to the clubhouse Saturday.
Well, honey.
Yeah.
Can I please get a new Escalade?
What?
Well, you can't expect me to drive through the carpool line in that thing.
That thing is only 2 years old.
Huh. 2 years what?
2 years old.
Exactly. Old. She'll be showing off all over town. I can't drive it. You know, it's her fault, really.
We can't afford it right now, okay? And besides, we haven't exactly been making all the payments on time here lately, all right? So, it sure would be nice to be sitting there at the clubhouse in my new Escalade when John drove up.
You know, why shouldn't we get a new car? You're as important as he is, right?
Well, I guess so.
You deserve it as much as he does, right?
Sure, yeah. Guess.
I know I deserve it more than Phyllis does, don't I?
Well, of course you do, sweetie. But listen, we've already got a second mortgage, right? And now the kids are in private school and the country club and the lake house and I just don't think we can swing it right now.
It's just not fair. I mean, the Simpsons have found a way to swing it, right?
Well, okay, wait a minute. Just let me think. Hey. Hey, wait. I think I've got this. What if I take a little money out of our 401k and then pay off the second mortgage? And then we can take out an equity line of credit and pay for the Escalade, and we get a tax write-off on the interest.
What? So you're telling me that we'll pay off our second mortgage and get a tax deduction?
Yeah.
I think it would be irresponsible not to. Hello, OnStar.
Hello.
Okay, scary stuff. Let's be honest. I mean, who of us have ever had a conversation like that? You know, either with your spouse or with a friend or even with yourself. It's amazing It is amazing what we can talk ourselves into if we really want something. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about the thing that drives most of our financial decisions. And that thing that drives most of our financial decisions is discontentment. Who of us, if you think about it with a show of hands, who of us have ever been discontent with what you have? Where you've either not been happy with your current car, your current house, your current clothing, your current couch, your current TV? Who of us have ever been discontent? Okay, you see what I mean? Most of us have most probably been in a position where we didn't even know that we needed something until we saw it. I didn't know I needed an iPad till I saw it. I've heard many sisters didn't know they needed an iPad till their husbands bought it for them. We've all been in a position where we go into Pick and Pay or Checkers or wherever it is that you shop. You go in to get one thing and you walk out with 10 things. You walk into the hardware store to get one thing and you walk out with 10. I do that and I'm not even a handyman. You walk into the clothing store. For let's be honest, 5 things. And you walk out with 50 things. There is something inside of us that just wants bigger, better, shinier, faster, and newer. And what makes matters worse is that we live in a culture where on a daily basis you can see that which you do not have. Every day you see it on the TV. Every day you see it on the billboards and the magazines and the newspapers. Wherever you drive, you just see what you cannot have. You go and visit a friend and what do you see? You bump into them and what do you see? They've got a new car. We constantly see stuff that we don't have and it feels in us a desire saying, I've got to have it. Wouldn't it be great if we could have that? Wouldn't it really just make our lives so much easier or simpler if we could have that? Wouldn't it be cool if I could have that? Wouldn't I be cool if I could have that? And though we didn't even know that we needed it until we saw it, and then suddenly we realized that what we have is not good enough until we saw what we did not even know that we had, did not have in the first place. It looks different for all of us. For Simon, it might be in the form of a car where you're just feeling like, I would really want that. For others, it can be in the form of a house. It can be in the form of furniture. It can be in the form of a holiday. Ever felt like, don't I deserve that kind of holiday? It can be in the form of, shouldn't I also be able to retire in that way? It looks different for all of us, but it's all the same. Most of us have that something that when you see it or when you hear about it, emotions get aroused and you start trying to figure out how you can get it. How you can make it happen and why you should have it. Not only why you should, why you even deserve to have it. Now, if we stop long enough to think about it, we will realize that in actual fact, it is all insanity. And it is insanity because it will never end. Which brings us to the problem with discontentment. Discontentment is an appetite. And like any other appetite, it is never finally and fully satisfied. Think about hunger. It's an appetite. Have you ever had a buffet meal, a lunch or a supper, where, what have you, where after you've eaten it, you feel like, man, I really feel, let's call it just full. I feel very full. But only an hour or two later, what happens? You're hungry again. And at that point, you thought, I will most probably never have to eat anything in my life again. But only an hour or two later, you say, man, I feel hungry. Let me just grab something small out of the fridge. The same is true with acquiring stuff. We will never be fully and finally satisfied. Now, that is an enormous problem if you live in our society. If you maybe live by yourself in a desert, you will be fine. But we don't live by ourselves in the desert. We live in a consumer-driven society where every single day we are bombarded with images, ads, and realities of what we do not have. We are constantly reminded of how far behind we are. We are constantly reminded of how out of style we are. We are constantly reminded of how what we have is not good enough. And that's a problem. The question that I want us to ask today and try and figure out is, it is a reality of life. It is a problem. It is an appetite that cannot be fully and finally satisfied. So what are we going to do with it? Satisfying it doesn't make it go away. As a matter of fact, like most appetites, if you satisfy it, what happens? It grows. It becomes bigger. Is it that if you are big as a person, are you less hungry? And the bigger you get, the less hungry you are? Or is it the bigger I get, the more hungry I become? The more I satisfy my eating habits, the more I want to satisfy. The more I satisfy buying things, the more I will buy, the more I would want. So what do I do with that? That's what we're going to talk about this morning. How do we handle discontentment? Because we have to do something about it. Discontentment is one of those things where either you deal with it or it will deal with you. Discontentment has the potential to either one, ruin you financially, or two, make you lose yourself and who you are in the constant pursuit of things. So how do we deal with it? One option is move to a desert and live there by yourself. But a thumbsuck would tell me that not too many of us would be interested in doing that. So what do we do if we don't live in a desert? What do we do if we live in our society? Luckily for us, there is a passage, as always, in the Bible that describes and tells us what to do. Take a look in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Now this passage here in 1 Timothy chapter 6 is a passage that addresses rich people. Now, I don't know if you can remember from past classes who the rich people are, or what rich people look like. Most of us saw rich people, or a rich person at least, this morning in the mirror. Rich people are all people who have extra. Rich people are all the people who have more than what they need. And as rich people are all the people that have more than a day's food and has clothes on their back. That is the context in which this is written. Because the way that we live compared to how people lived 2,000 years ago, and even really how half of the world population today lives, really in comparison, if you look from day-to-day living, my guess is that the majority of us in here today, we are rich. The majority of us in here today have more than a day's food. The majority of us here today have more than one set of clothes. That would make us, in biblical terms, in biblical language and context here, it would make us rich. 1 Timothy chapter 6 here, it's a letter that the apostle Paul wrote to a young man that he mentored named Timothy. And he says to him in 1 Timothy chapter 6 verse 6, he gives him some great advice about this issue of discontentment. And he says to him, but godliness with contentment is great gain. He says, if you can be godly, if you can be a godly man or a godly woman, and you can be content, that would be of great gain to you. That would be of great advantage. Now, we'll see in a little moment, a little bit lower in verse 9, we'll see why it is such an advantage. But he says, to be able to be content and godly will be of great gain to you. Verse 7. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. We brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. That is a statement that none of us, no matter who you are, can argue with. It is a simple fact that we all know. The day that you arrived out of mommy's womb, What did you come with? Nothing. And the day that you depart, what will you leave with? Nothing. The only thing that you'll actually have extra is the clothes that you would either be cremated in or buried in. We don't see many hearses with a trailer behind on the way to the funeral parlor. So if we started with absolutely nothing, then really if we receive anything along the way, we should be very grateful, because no matter what you receive, you had more than what you started with. And no matter what you have, even if you have just the clothes on your back, you're in a better position than the day that you arrived. Verse 8. He says, but if we, this is Paul, him and his crew, he says, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. If we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm tempted to say, good for you, man. But that's just not for me. I don't just want to have food for the day. I don't just want to have the clothes on my back. I don't just want to have what I have. I want to have more than what I have. I want to have extra. Now, why is he content with that? Why is it great gain, godliness with contentment? He gives us the answer in verse 9. He says, here's why. Verse 9. People who want to get rich. Now, it's people who want to have extra. People who want more than they need. People who are not content. My guess would be people like you and me. People who want to get rich, verse 9. Listen to what happens to them. Fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. That's encouraging. He's saying, listen here, all people that are not content with what we have, if we want more, if we want extra, he says, when we are like that, we are set up. He's not saying don't get extra. He's saying, but when you do want extra, we are setting ourselves up for a specialized temptation that those who do not have extra do not have. He says, when we are constantly pursuing more, constantly pursuing better, faster, shinier, better, he says, people like that often fall into a temptation and into a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. Listen to those words, plunge, ruin, destruction. The Greek for that actually entails drown. My guess is that a number of us have either seen it or experienced it over the years, where you got yourself into trouble because you wanted more. You got yourself into financial trouble because you wanted bigger, better, faster, shinier. You got yourself into trouble because you were trying to live a champagne lifestyle on a beer budget. He says, so with extra money, he says, just know that. Why is godliness with contentment great gain? Why is it gain if you are content? Because if you're not content, if you are discontent, with extra money, with extra possession, comes extra temptation. With extra money comes the ability to plunge yourself into ruin and into destruction. So saying, hey, it's not saying do not have extra. You're saying just know it is great gain if you're content with godliness, because with extra, there will be extra challenges. He continues, verse 10. For the love of money, in other words, the love of money is to prioritize the getting of more above God. The love of money. To prioritize the getting of more above God's purposes. to prioritize the getting of more above your spouse, above your children. It says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. He says, making the pursuit for more your top priority will be the root of all kinds of evil. I'm sure that a number of us, we can either attest to this personally or we have seen it. A number of years ago, we had a family friend visit. And he's about as old as my dad, and his kids are just a little bit older than me. And I've not seen him for years. So I ask him, obviously, how's he doing, and how's the family doing? And I said, how's your son? And he said, my son, if I see him, I'll kill him. I thought, Jesus, that's pretty strong. I said, kill him. I'll kill him. I said, what happened? What do you guess? Money. Business deal between dad and son that went wrong. A pursuit of money says eventually in some way or another, if you don't bridle it, leads to trouble. It is the love of money that breaks up families. It is the love of money that's the reason why so many kids grow up today without barely seeing their parents, because their parents want more. And we justify it. Like in the movie, we can say, but I'm doing it for them. So they can have bigger, better, faster. I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for their education. I'm doing it so that they would be secure where all your kids are saying, so all we want is we actually just want to have time with you. That's what matters to us. A love of money can lead to a loss of integrity. We've seen that again and again. He says, verse 10, some people eager for money, listen to this, some people eager for money have wandered from the faith. That's huge. He's saying that if you have more than you need, you have greater potential to walk away from the faith than those who do not have more than they need. Now, let me just catch up here from a couple of weeks ago, if you may be new here today, when we talk about extra. We all should really, not all, most of us really should have extra. We should have margin. In other words, this is our income and this is our lifestyle. And most of us today, we don't feel like we have extra because our lifestyle keeps on chasing our income. And because it keeps on catching up onto our income, we never have extra. And we feel pressure. But the honest truth is that if we were just to scale down, if we were to maybe just buy a smaller house, a smaller car, if we would maybe just scale down our lifestyle expenses, then it would create margin. Then it would create extra. And he says, when that extra is there, or when it's catching up, the temptation will be greater. The temptation even to leave the faith. And I've seen that over the years. I've seen how people have compromised their commitment to even just come to church because they rather want to go to work. I've seen people, and it's not just church, how they've missed time on their daily devotions with God because there's a continuous pursuit. More, more, more. I need to pay the bills. I got a new car. I got a new home. We got this. We got to do that. We got to do this. We got to do that. He says, some people eager for money have even wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. But then he starts getting into solutions, verse 11. He says, but you, he's speaking to Timothy, man of God, or woman of God, or the people of God. He says, but you, man of God, you need to be different. But you, man of God, flee from all of this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Here Paul is giving us some great biblical advice as to how to bridle discontentment. He says, if you are one of those people who want to have more than you need, if you are one of those people who want to have extra, if you are one of those people who has been set up for that specialized temptation, here's what I want you to do, man of God, woman of God. He says, you need to flee. The word flee there is the word that you would use in the Greek for escape. You need to flee from it. I'm sure a number of us have been in a situation where maybe someone tried to mug you. That's very common in our country. What do you do when someone wants to mug you? What do you do? Hug? What is the emotion that comes to mind when someone wants to mug you, when someone pulls out a big knife? Flee! What do you do? Do you walk away? Do you moonwalk away? Flee! Flee is, let's get out of here. He says, flee from this pursuit of more and more. Flee from this pursuit of bigger, better, faster. Flee, run, escape. But he doesn't leave it there. Because what do I do with all of that emotion inside of me? Because isn't it an emotion that drives us? Emotion is a fascinating thing. It's fascinating how you can see something. It can be something small, it can be something big. Where you see something and something, it's just like your eyes just light up. You could even have been tired at that time. And you see that dress, that shoe, whatever it might be. You just see it and suddenly it's just like. And it's just as you come to life. So what do I do with all of that emotion? All of that passion? All of that desire? He says, rechannel it. He says, flee from all of this and then pursue. Go after. Run after. Have you ever dropped money, a note, like a big note, like a 100 rand note, and the wind's blowing? What do you do? I mean, it's pursue, it's go after it. Oh my goodness, let me grab it. He says, flee from this, flee from the brighter, the shinier, the more, the extra, the what I want, the what I need. And he says, rather take that emotion, rechannel that emotion and pursue righteousness. Righteousness is to do what is right in relation to God and people around us. He says, pursue that. Pursue a relationship with God. But rather, pursue the relationships with your family. Godliness. Godliness is a reverence for God flowing out of a worshipful heart. He says, pursue that. Rather, take that emotion. Take that energy. And we all have experienced the emotion. We've all experienced that energy. Take that and rechannel it into a pursuit of godliness, of faith, of love, of endurance, and of gentleness. He says, if you're discontent and you always want more, if you always want bigger, if you always want faster, shinier, you have to make an intentional decision to take all of that emotion, all of that passion, all of that desire inside of you and re-channel it. So use it. We'll have discontentment. But use it. Channel it for greater things. So here's an important thing. The way that you deal with discontentment is not only by trying to be content. It doesn't help you just look through the mall and say, don't look. Switch off the radio, switch off the TV. I'm just going to be content. I'm going to make my own desert in my house. I'm going to pretend like we live in a desert. It's not only just try and be content. He says, no, re-channel. Skip down to verse 17. He gives us some more advice. Chapter 6. He says, command those, verse 17. Command those, and again, strong word, eh? Command. I don't think I've ever used that word in my life. I said to my kids, I want you to get with the program, but I've never said, I command you. Okay? Strong word. He says, command. So serious, this is an important matter. Command those who are rich in this present world. Command those who have extra in this present world, who have more than they need in this present world. Command them to do what? Listen carefully. Not to be arrogant. Not to be arrogant. Why? Because when you have more than you need, when you have extra, the temptation is to be arrogant. When you have more than others, and no matter who you are, this is not just poor old Bill Gates. This can be anybody. It doesn't matter how little you have. When you have more than others, when you have more than the clothes on your back and the food for the day, the temptation is to be arrogant. The temptation is to look down on other people. The temptation is to see yourself as better than others. The temptation is to say, oh, well, luckily I'm not there because I am me. I have what I have because of who I am. I have what I have because of my education. And while other people were goofing off, I was grinding the mill at university. I have what I have because I work so hard. I have what I have because of all of my talent. I am a self-made man. He says, no, that's going to be the temptation. Remember, godliness with contentment is great gain. Why? Because when you have extra, when you have extra, there's going to be the temptation to be arrogant. How many people do you know that only has the clothes on their back and enough food for a day to be arrogant and seeing themselves as better than others? They don't. It's a temptation that only comes to the rich. Just command them not to be arrogant. Nor, here's the other temptation. Nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. What other temptation do we have when we have extra? We have the temptation of putting our hope in our wealth instead of in God. We looked at that a couple of weeks ago. If only I could have a good retirement, I'll be okay. I'll be fine. I'll be able to breathe. And I'm not saying we shouldn't plan for retirement. That's not the point. But if I could only drive a car like that, I would be fulfilled. If only I could own that. If we could only own a house and not rent, we'll feel secure. If we could only get a better house or a bigger house, we will feel better about ourselves and we will function better as a family. Where do we put our hope if we think that way? He says, command them not to be arrogant and not to put their hope in wealth, but in God. He says, as disciples, as you, he says, you man of God, don't be like that. Be different. Don't put your hope in your salary. Put your hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. What we have because God gave it to us. He says, trust God, not your wealth. Trust the giver, not the gift. Verse 18. He continues, pretty tough talk that they're having here. Command them, again the rich people, those that have extra, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. He says in our context, command those, again, the rich people, those with extra, command them that they would, with that extra, do good. To be rich and good deeds with the extra. To be generous with the extra. To be willing to share the extra. Again, you simply cannot just not be arrogant. You cannot just not put your hope in wealth. You need to flee the one side and you need to pursue the other. It says, flee from the arrogance. Flee from the desire to put your hope in wealth. But rather, what should I do on this side? Pursue what I do with the extra. Pursue good deeds. Be rich. We all know what it's like to be rich. We've seen it. Okay, if we don't experience it ourselves, we look at everyone else. Oh, just so big. Oh, just it says, be rich. Be abundant in good deeds. Pursue that. He says, pursue generosity. Pursue a willingness to share. Can you imagine what would happen if even just those of us who are in this room today were to do that? If we were to take our extra and pursue good deeds. with it. If we were to take our action and say, let's pursue generosity. Let's pursue a willingness to share. So that people, when they look at our lives, instead of being amazed at what you drive or where you live, they'll be amazed at what you've done for God. I'm like, but wow. So you're supporting missions? Oh, wow. So you're supporting that shelter? Oh, wow. So you're helping the poor? Oh, wow. So you're doing great things for God's kingdom? Oh, wow. So you're investing in people's eternity? Man, that is amazing. You must be a man of God. You must be a woman of God. And I say that not because I know you go to church. I say that because I can see that you are different. I can see that the way that you use your extra is different than what I do. Verse 19. He says, in this way, now it's in this way, meaning doing good with your extra, being generous with your extra, being willing to share your extra. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of, and I love this phrase, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. So that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. See, another temptation that the rich will always have is to take a hold of a life that is not truly life. To take a hold of a life that in the end will just leave them completely empty and unsatisfied. And therefore, he says, tell those rich people that there is a way that they can leverage that extra, that there is a way that they can leverage that discontentment. There is a way that they can leverage that desire, that passion, that fire that is inside of them. There is a way that they can leverage that to have a life that is truly life. And he says that way is to flee the bigger, better, shinier, more, and to pursue godliness, righteousness, gentleness, kindness, to pursue good deeds, to pursue generosity, to pursue a willingness to share. He says, and in that way, what will happen? In that way, you will bridle your discontentment. Now, in closing, can you imagine what your personal finances would have looked like today if you've been living like this for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Can you imagine where you would be at spiritually if for the last 5, 10, 20 years what you've been doing is you've been fleeing and saying, yes, there is extra, and yes, there's nothing wrong with a house, and there's nothing wrong with a car, and there's nothing wrong with a good car and a good house. There's nothing wrong with any of those things. But I want to flee. I want to escape. Can you imagine that? 5, 10, 20 years. I want to escape the trap, the temptation of the constant bigger, better, faster, shinier. And not only do I want to escape that, not only do I want to flee from that, but I've rechanneled all of that energy and I've put it in a pursuit of godliness, of endurance, of faith, of love. I've put it in a pursuit of good deeds, a pursuit of generosity, a pursuit of a willingness to share. My guess is that for most of us in here, our financial situation would look a whole lot different. For me personally, what I've come to realize is if I've lived this way for the last 5, 10, 20 years, my personal finances would look a whole lot different. So, how do you deal with discontentment? Pretty straightforward. Flee and pursue. Amen.